from Haunted Free House.
We're not live. But it's for your own good. We'll be talking about business, real estate.
Unicorns.
No. Motivation. Pop culture. Absolutely not. Sports.
Good friends.
Yeah, maybe good friends. Hey, look, kid, why don't you just go get your own podcast?
Fine, do your show.
Maybe I will. All right. Well, welcome back. Welcome to episode number 4 of the Sure Enough Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Kelscher. And today I'm joined by my team leader at my real estate office here in Lake Charles, Louisiana, Miss Keisha Bradley. Keisha, thanks for joining me.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hey, thank you for taking time out to be on the show. I know you're very busy, and I know people always assume that other people are busy, but I see that you're busy since we work in the same office. So let's just jump right in here. I want to just kind of mention to people that may not know, even if they know real estate, Keller Williams as a franchise is a little bit different, set up a little bit different, and your role as a team leader is not a broker, because everyone works, every real estate agent works for a broker. The broker is in charge. They hold our license. We're accountable to them because we're all independent contractors. But we have an additional layer here at Keller Williams. And we have a team leader, and that's you. Would you like to explain what that means?
Sure, I'd love to. So basically, under the Keller Williams model, we have a team leader, which is essentially the CEO of Keller Williams Realty Lake Charles. And with every Keller Williams, there's a market center. And so most people would call it an office. We call it a market center. So within the market center, we have different roles. So I'm the CEO, team leader of Keller Williams Realty Lake Charles Market Center. And I'm here to hold the agents accountable for their business. So that's something that Keller Williams does, is we pour into our agents and we really give them the opportunity to own a business and conduct business as a independent contractor and a small business owner. So I hold everyone accountable to their business. I'm there to answer real estate questions as well, but if it comes down to the broker questions, I refer them out. I'm your cheerleader. I consult. We plan whenever things are going bad, and I push when things are going good. I oversee the operations of the office, make sure that everyone's doing what they're supposed to do, all that exciting stuff.
So no big deal, basically, right?
Yeah, no big deal.
So I got to say, so if everyone's listening, I've been a realtor for a year, if you haven't been following me, and Keisha actually took over as team leader within that year, actually quite recently. When was that? About 4 months ago. So I got to know Keisha originally as a realtor, and she wasn't my actual mentor, but as a mentor, she taught classes, and so I got to meet her originally in a different capacity. So how long, tell me, up until 4 months ago, how long were you a realtor?
I have been in the real estate industry for over 12 years.
Okay, so just...
And I took some time out, and I got into the mortgage industry. But I count it all as one big span.
Okay, so how long were you out? You did 12 years total, but how long was your break when you were doing that?
A year.
A year, okay. So why did you leave real estate?
That's a really good question. So I moved from Washington State to Louisiana, and when I did so, I was a single mom, and the thought of starting a brand new career, even though it was still part, even though I knew what I was doing, it was a whole nother market. And so I had been gone for 10 years, and it was that I was coming into a place where I really had to get to know everyone again. And I decided that I probably wasn't the best idea to jump into real estate as a single mom with 100% commission. So I sought out loan. I was going to be a loan officer, which I thought I was going to be.
So you thought you were going to be.
Yeah. So yeah. But I knew going into it that if I didn't like it, then I would come out knowing more about mortgage to be able to benefit my clients.
And you feel that was the case when you came back in? Did you feel like you really knew side?
Yes. Yeah.
So did you have any, was it horrible or it just wasn't what you wanted to do? Like what was your actual overall experience with that?
It was horrible for me, but if someone's into that kind of thing, then it was all for it. But for me, I'm a people person. I need to be in front of people. I need to be interacting with people. And with that, I was behind a computer answering phones, taking applications, and that just wasn't my forte.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like you.
No.
So let me ask you, I know that you moved, we didn't talk about, you didn't say this, but I know that you originally from here in Louisiana. Correct. But you did mention that you moved from Washington State to here. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I'm in a similar situation. I moved here, but I'm not from here. So you're in the opposite situation that I am. Well, actually, you were in the same situation when you moved to Washington.
Right.
You didn't know people, but then you moved back home. What was your experience, first of all, when you moved to Washington, you didn't know anybody, and then on the flip side of that, when you moved back here, was it just the Holy Grail since you knew everyone, or was it starting over both times?
It was starting over both times.
Okay.
When I moved to Washington, I literally knew no one. And so when I moved there, I didn't get into real estate right away. And so I had built a small population of friends I could count on one hand. And they were my people, my biggest advocates, my best friends. And then when I got into real estate, then I realized, oh my goodness, what am I doing? I know no one. And I'm not from here. I have no roots here. And even the person I married wasn't from the town or the city that we were living in. So it was fresh start, grinding, figuring out. And then when I moved back, I was really under the impression like, oh my goodness, I'm going to get back with all my friends, the people I went to college with. But 10 years had passed with casual conversations, and that was, I don't want to date myself, but that was before Facebook. And so Facebook was just getting introduced, and I had to start all over.
So two times, both times.
Both times.
Fresh start.
Yeah.
Did you learn from the first time that you had to start from scratch with your core group of friends, did that help you still when you moved back here to Louisiana?
I did learn that it is important to have a core group of friends. However, when I moved back, those core group of friends, we still just weren't, it wasn't like when I left. And so I had to build a new core group of friends. Even though I still loved and communicated with my friends from high school, I had to build new relationships.
Business relationships.
Yes.
So I can definitely relate to having to build new relationships. I moved here in 2017 after I retired. Most people know that. And I knew nobody at all. Like I had no contacts with anyone other than my ex-wife. And she wasn't going to be very helpful in my real estate career. I wasn't a realtor yet. I knew I was going to do that, but it took me a little while to go through the school, of course, and get started. And I procrastinated a little bit. Could have done it a little bit faster. But I knew I had to meet people and just needed to meet people in general. But the only people I met for the first, I'd say, 6 months were my daughter's friends' parents. And those were band, specifically with the marching band. Because my daughter was doing marching band stuff, and I talked about it, I think, in my first podcast. But, you know, I knew I was new in real estate, so I purposely, not that I was, you know, not genuinely interested in meeting people, but I knew I was going to have to. So I put a lot of effort into meeting, really getting to know the people that, at least the people that were helping out with the band. And they were like-minded and, you know, just trying to get a core group of people that had something in common. And I did that. And it was funny because I started real estate and they all knew I was doing real estate and I always talked about real estate. And then when I finally got my license, nobody knew anybody. I'm talking probably 75 people. Nobody knows anybody that needs any help with real estate. And it's fine. I'm not, you know, there's nothing wrong with those people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's something I'm doing wrong or whatever. I do know that I'm not taken very seriously. And I guess that's my fault. And I know they'd love to help me, but they just don't know anybody. For whatever reason, in the town we live in, people aren't buying houses. Mm-hmm. And so it is what it is. And then the other people that I'm meeting constantly are realtors or lenders or, you know, other people within the real estate industry, which is great. I've loved everyone I've met for the most part, but it's not really helping my business at all. So it's just kind of, did you have a similar, you probably did a better job of meeting people before you even knew you're going to be a realtor. Is that how?
Well, with my personality, I flourish around, when I'm around people that I'm already familiar with. It's actually really hard for me to meet new people. And I can talk to people all day long, but to have real, true, meaningful relationships, it was a lot harder for me. And I really wanted people to see me as, like you, a real estate professional. But when I'm, you know, hanging out and chilling and, you know, BSing with my friends, it's really hard to be able to put on that real estate hat and be like, hey, choose me for your real estate agent. I'm real professional whenever we're playing horseshoes.
Right.
So it was a huge challenge for the people that I built relationships with to take me seriously enough to want to do business with me. And so I fastly realized that for me to be able to be successful, I really needed to be around people who understood business. And so I started attending like business seminars, and I started interacting with people that had a business mind, and that's where I developed my relationships.
Right. That makes sense. I struggle with that also, because no matter what I'm doing, I don't turn off my personality. I'm not saying you turn off your personality, but my personality is very playful and I guess juvenile sometimes, and I know I probably should act differently business-wise, but I don't want to. That's just what I don't feel comfortable being anything other than who I am. And that's a struggle for me. And it probably just worked out naturally for you because you're, mm-hmm. Just from interacting with you, you are professional, mm-hmm. but also personable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm personable, but I'm not very businesslike, and mm-hmm. that's just the way I am.
Yeah, and I think that's, so for me, you know, someone did mention, like, you know, well, Keisha might not be the fun, you know, team leader.
Who said
but
that?
That's okay for me, because I'm really not. Unless you're at my home, you're not going to see that side of me, because when I'm at work, I am business mode. I am professional Keisha, and I really want what's best for the agents and what's best for our clients. And so that's my role. And so that's the hat I put on. But when I get home and I'm not on the clock, it's a different person. And that's just, I'm okay with that. And I actually applaud you for being able to be that same person, whether you're at work or at home. I think that's a huge value.
Well, I appreciate that you think it's a value. Sometimes it seems like a detriment. But no, it was funny. My biggest accomplishment after 22 years in the Army, honestly, was staying the same. From going to a lowly private all the way up to a first sergeant in charge of 120 people and still being like a 14-year-old kid in my mind, that was tough for me. And maybe it's not even the best thing for the Army, but it worked. And, you know, I was successful. And so I don't know that I can replicate that, though. And I don't really care to,
mm-hmm.
Just because that's just who I am. And we kind of discussed this the other day in our meeting before the team meeting, is that if I had to, like if I was starving to death, I would just have to change because this isn't necessarily working right now. But that's not the case. And so I don't know if that makes sense.
I don't know that I would say that it's not working. I just think that maybe you have a harder time putting out that maybe everyone sees you as Mark and not Mark the real estate agent because you are the same. So maybe if whenever you're communicating with your friends, maybe you do maybe need to talk more about real estate than the things that you talk about. And
I definitely do. I think if you ask them, I definitely talk about real estate a lot. But I think even that, I do it in a way. We always talk about do unto others as you would have others do unto you, if you want to get philosophical. And I don't want people talking about business to me. So I do it in a way, I talk about business, but I do it kind of in a sarcastic, funny way, like I do most things. And so obviously maybe that causes people not to take me very seriously. But it also, in my mind, I'm still getting the message out, like, hey, don't forget I'm a realtor also. And maybe at some point it will just naturally flow. I know these things take time, take their own time, but...
3 years.
3 years. I'm hanging there for 3 years. After 3 years, if this is how it is, I'm done. No.
No. I think it's awesome that you're just being the authentic Mark. And I think that your clients will see value in that, because it's one thing, because this is a very serious job, and to be able to shed light and make a good time and a fun time, I love that. And it'll pay off for you. So stay true to who you are.
Well, I'm going to either way. I appreciate it. But yeah, I'm actually looking forward to, I actually, on my last podcast, I talked to Channing Moore, the lender for Bayou Mortgage. And we talked a little bit about how I want to work with people that are like me. I want to work with people that appreciate the fact that I'm just laid back. I don't want fuddy-duddy, Mr. Stuffy Pants. I don't want to deal with that, because we do have, it's a people business, and we spend, especially if I'm working with a buyer, spending a lot of time with the buyer, showing them houses and then just having conversations. I don't want to be uncomfortable around them. It'll be less enjoyable, which, you know, I'm not doing this just to have a great time, but it's also part of it.
Well, I mean, it helps to enjoy what you're doing, right?
Exactly. So let's talk about enjoying what you're doing. We have sort of a like mind about real estate in general, but especially about Keller Williams as a franchise. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Let's do it.
So I know you don't get worked up about it, and I try not to either, but being a newer agent, I'm on a bunch of Facebook groups, and I'm not a rah-rah, you know, you are the cheerleader, you're the official cheerleader, you're the CEO of this office, and I'm not, but I get fired up, honestly, when I see people talk smack about Keller Williams. And it's really, I usually don't say anything. I don't get on there and say how great Keller Williams is and you need to come to Keller Williams. I don't do that because that sounds kind of, to me, that sounds kind of weird. I do believe that. I think everyone should work here that is a good agent. And I do think it's the best. But when people say it's garbage or people say this is what they're about, it infuriates me because Gary Keller set up the company a certain way, structured, you know, along with his admin staff, his trusted soldiers, if you will, they put in place all these values. And I'll be honest with you, I chose Keller Williams. I read up on all the brokerages, and from what I understood, Keller Williams had the best training, which made sense. Okay, I need the best training because I don't have any. I'm starting up from scratch. But also the values aligned with the Army values, not identical, but very similar, the belief system. And I'm not saying anything about any of the brokerages. I don't know that they don't have beliefs and values that are similar, but I know that Keller Williams pushes that. Mm-hmm. It puts it front and center, not, oh, and also we, you know, believe in win-win and all the other things. It's front and center. It's
the foundation of who we are.
Right.
And I'm with you. I do. It really burns me up inside, and then I just have to take a step back and I'm like, well, Why? What happened for you to have that experience or for you to have that bad taste in your mouth? And I think let's just use football team. You know, you can have an amazing football team, but if your coach isn't performing and doing what they need to do to pour into his players to make them great, same thing with Keller Williams. Even though we have models and we have structures and we have standards, I think with every market center, you can fall in to a place where your leader isn't serving the agents, and then those bad experiences happen. Because I know Gary Keller tries really hard to ensure that every market center is living up to their standards and expectations and their culture, but it doesn't always happen. And so sometimes I feel bad for those people who've had a bad experience, because if you've ever had a good experience, you'll never want to be with any other place.
Right.
And so I'm with you. I feel bad for those who've had a bad experience, and I'm with you. Like, I want to be a huge advocate for Keller Williams because it has changed my life. I went from a previous brokerage, I won't say who it is, and it was like no one wanted to share with their ideas, how to get business, how to keep business, how to close anything. Everything was a secret, and it was hard for me. I struggled, especially being in Washington when I didn't even know hardly any people, and I needed that help, and no one was there for me. And it ended up being that another agent came into the office around the same time, and she was about a couple years older than me, and it was the blind leading the blind. And then I got introduced to Keller Williams, and I've never looked back. It changed my life, and I want to be an advocate for Keller Williams just because of everything that it's given me.
Right. And I'm with you, and I've only been an agent for a year, but I tell people, and I'm not joking, I say it in a funny way, sarcastic way, but I tell everyone I'm not going to ever leave Keller Williams, mm-hmm. even if there's a fire. I'm not leaving. And I mean that, and it doesn't even matter. I see people may wonder, well, how I can say that if I've only been here mm-hmm. and I've only been an agent for a year. But like you said, I see the values system, and I understand that too better than a lot of people. I was in the Army, huge organization, goals very clearly stated, you know, rules, structure, culture, all that stuff very clearly stated. So the chief of staff of the Army can't guarantee that everyone in the Army, down to the lowest private, is following that.
That's right.
They don't. Not everyone lives up to that. Mm-hmm. And some people, and not everyone gets filtered out. Because mm-hmm. as part of your job, if somebody, I know you're not evaluating us necessarily, but if somebody blatantly doesn't fit the culture, I assume you're just gonna, if it comes down to it, mm-hmm. they won't work here. Right.
Yeah, and I have to have those tough conversations that, you know, this is our belief system, this is our culture. If you're not in line with that, then maybe you need to find another place.
But we do get, since we're independent contractors, we get a lot of rope to hang ourselves with. We give a lot of leeway to run our business however we want within the confines of the Keller Williams structure, belief system, and culture. And so going back to what you said about, you know, you have to, you know, make sure that's happening, or the leader has to make sure, the leader of the office has to make sure that's happening. And if it's not, if you're not doing that, it just, people will fall through the cracks or just continue to down this road. And it happens in every industry. It happens everywhere.
And that's one of the benefits of being with Keller Williams, is having someone who's actually looking out for the better good of you as an agent and your business. And so, much like a broker, they're there to answer broker questions, contract, law. I'm here to make sure your business is doing good. So yeah, I am evaluating your business. I'm pulling numbers every month and looking at everyone's production and making sure it's in line with what you told me you wanted. I want what you want. And that's the really awesome thing about Keller Williams, is that it gives us, hey, it gives me the opportunity to have those conversations with you. Like, hey, Mark, how much do you want to make? How many homes do you want to sell? And then whatever that is, I want that for you. And I'm holding you accountable to that. And I'm keeping track of your numbers. And if you're not reaching your numbers, then I'm knocking on the door. Hey, what's going on? Can I help you?
Right. And if you weren't there doing that, I would just be sitting here struggling. And mm-hmm. I may be too, you don't know what's going on with me. I may be too proud to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And that bothers me too. I see that a lot. People saying, my broker didn't help me. I went here. It's not Keller Williams, but it's anywhere. My brokerage didn't help. My broker didn't help me, didn't teach me, didn't give me X, Y, or Z. Like, did you ask for any help? Were they really not available, or were you just like expecting them to hold your hand and give you stuff? And people do you see that? I see people respond that way or say things like, and they ask, what does your broker give you? What does your broker give you? What does your broker give you? Opportunity. Like, my answer is always opportunity. Like, what do you want to be given is what I ask people. What are you looking for? You shouldn't be asking what your broker can do for you. You should just see how you fit mm-hmm. within the brokerage. Is that how you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, first I think that people need to realize that you need to be in line with the standards and the belief system and the culture of where you're going. And we say culture a lot because it's really important for us. Because of the way our model works is that we cap. We pay in Lake Charles Market Center $22,000 a year, and you cap. And what that allows us to do is stop looking at real estate agents as numbers and as what they can contribute to the culture. So I could see a $70 million producer and a $10 million producer or an $800,000 producer. And I look at who they are as a person and what they contribute to the whole market center, not just in the production that they have, but who they are as a person. Are they into education? Can they help teach? What opportunities can I provide for them? Because that is something with Keller Williams. It's so cliche, but it's a land of opportunity. When I started out with Keller Williams, I never thought in a million years that I would be a team leader. Mm-hmm. But through all the opportunities, here I am. And what a wonderful place to be that is always looking to grow you as a person and as a business owner.
I think you had been team leader for 2 weeks, maybe. And I asked you a question. We had gone to Bold. If you don't know what Bold is, it's our premium training that we can pay for. It's a 7-week training program. And I learned something in Bold that I thought would benefit all of our agents. And so I asked Keisha, or I just said, hey, Keisha, I think somebody should teach this. And without taking a breath, she said, okay, when do you want to teach it? And I was taken aback by that, but I took it. I knew she wasn't joking, so I said, well, okay, whenever. And I taught the class probably like 3 weeks after that. And it was funny because, you know, it was kind of a, when we learned it, it was just a little blip. It was just an overview of the system, but it was an awesome, powerful system that I really thought everybody would benefit from. And so by her saying, okay, go ahead and teach it, I had to go and like dig in and learn more about the system and actually use it more instead of just, you know, thinking about it. And so I did that. And then the person in charge of the education committee actually asked me, he missed the class, and asked me if I teach it again. And so I did it again. And I won't say I did bad the first time, because I don't do anything bad. But when I did it the second time, it actually improved probably twice as much. And I didn't know I was going to have to go. The first time I had to put 15 minutes of content that I received into an hour-long training session. And the second time I did it, unbeknownst to me until a couple days prior, it was an hour and a half. So 90 minutes worth of stuff that I learned in 15 minutes, which was awesome. It actually gave me a chance to put more mindset stuff and kind of explain to agents why to use it and what will happen if you don't use it. I use the fear of missing out a lot during the class, but it was good. I talked for almost an hour about why you should use it and just to convince people and to reiterate why it will help them and to definitely use it. And I think that helps because a lot of times I know I go to a lot of training here and I know you're not going to get anything out of it. If you don't do it, if you don't use it, you can learn the most amazing stuff. But if you don't apply it specifically to your business, then what's the point? So I really hammered home.
And I'm sure that's helped you personally professionally in your business too, because then you mastered something, was able to communicate and educate. You could teach it.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely advocate. And I did a video on Facebook the other day, and I absolutely advocate, if you want to really get good at something, teach it. Because it really makes you think about it in a different way. How do I communicate this to someone else? And it just makes you really, really analyze it more. So, but yeah, so I appreciate that you just put me on the spot there.
Oh, no problem.
No, it was good though. And I do believe, like, I need to give back to the agents because I will go to a ton of training and I'm always in receive mode. And that's just something that I knew that other agents didn't know. So why wouldn't I? Mm-hmm. I've only been doing it for a year, but I never once thought about it, honestly, for one second, like, why am I teaching a class to seasoned agents? And the guy that wanted me to teach it the second time, he's been an agent for 25 years. Mm-hmm. So he didn't know what the system was. So I still taught him that. So why not? I had the information. It's just like you said earlier, not hoarding information, sharing information. And we're all rowing the same boat. I don't remember what the quote is, something like a rising tide raises all ships or something like that.
Right.
Sounds cool. Sounds good. But yeah, it's just one of the things, it boggles my mind. I hear people say, because I talk to people that I meet, like, why did you join this other brokerage, or why did you join Keller Williams? And when people say they join other brokerages because of the training or the culture, I don't argue with them. I'm taken aback by it, and I just kind of like snicker to myself, but I don't know.
Well, I really think that there's three kinds of people. There's dependent, independent, and the interdependent. And much like broker, we're kind of that way too as a brokerage. We have dependent brokers, we have independent brokers, and we have interdependent. As Keller Williams, we're interdependent, which means that our agents are running this office. As a CEO, I work for you. You're not working for me. I'm here to serve you. And it's just a different way of looking at business. And that's what we are. We're in a business, and we want to pour into our agents and allow them to run a business, not just sell real estate. And that's the difference between the independent and the dependent. We're not for everyone. A dependent agent cannot come to Keller Williams, and we can't expect them to love it because they're so dependent on a brokerage doing everything for them that they really don't have that mentality of being their own entity.
Right. I love it. That's another thing that I see. People saying, your broker doesn't give you leads. Your broker doesn't go on appointments with you. Like, that's training. And I'm like, no, that's not training. That's
dependency.
Dependency. Absolutely dependency. So I'm sorry I interrupted you, but.
No, I mean, and once I realized that we're not for everyone, and we don't want everyone, we want like-minded real estate agents who are looking to own their own business and succeed through business. You know, keeping track of our numbers, knowing what our goals are, knowing where we're headed, looking at our expenses, and adjusting our sales as needed.
And I love another thing people talk about is the expenses. All right, I'm sure you get this all the time. And my favorite thing to hear is people arguing about the split, the commission split, that it's too high here or it's too high at this other place. Or, you know, maybe off, it's usually off by like 5 to 10%, whatever it is. And people don't think about, you know, you mentioned interdependency. I love the fact that Keller Williams, I don't love the fact that they take my money, but I love the fact that they take my money and they put it in the company. They're building the company, because at the end of the year, at the end of 5 years, the company that I'm saying I'm never gonna leave, I want them to be here. I don't want them to be out of business. And people don't realize this. There's gonna be a lot of brokers out of business soon. Like, landscape is getting a little bit crazy.
Yeah, it's a different world that we live in, and it's going to be, we're not gonna be doing business the same way that we're all used to, that we've been doing for the last 100 years. Technology's changing it, and we're on board and we're ready to move forward. And those who aren't on board with technology, they're going to get left behind, and it's a little scary.
Right. It's very scary. I love what Gary Keller has done. I know it sounds like a love fest, but I really mean it. I'm so psyched up about what I say, pumped up, psyched up, geeked up. I don't know. I'm excited about what Keller Williams is doing. They spent over $1 billion building this new system.
Yes.
And I hear it boggles my mind. It doesn't boggle my mind. I know why people say it. But it's another thing people say about Keller Williams. Everything's outdated. Like, your training's outdated. Your systems are outdated. Like, okay, cool. If you were with Keller, and it was ex-Keller Williams agents. Hey, buddy, if you were with Keller Williams in 1999, sure. I don't know what Keller Williams was like in 1999. It may have been outdated. And I will say, we'll talk about the premium training, BOLD. The BOLD program was super outdated. I went last year. I've been a real estate agent for 1 year. I went last year. Everyone told me how great it was, and it was great. It did a lot for me, but it was mostly mindset stuff, and it was very outdated. Other than the meat and potatoes of it, there was a lot of fluffy, outdated stuff. And for whatever reason, people always said, I've been to BOLD like 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 times across the board in the room, in class, everyone had gone multiple times. Most people had gone multiple times. And I'm like, okay, cool, good for you. But when it came time to take it again, you weren't team leader yet, but team leader at the time said, hey, you know, I want everyone to go and check out at least the first day. Because the first day they go, you go and they try to sell it to you. Like, you know mm-hmm. that. So I went, and I wasn't for sure going to sign up because it's $800, I guess. But $800 for something that I already had done like 6 months prior, and I wasn't super enthused about it. It was very good mindset and very good motivation stuff. But I already did that on my own a lot, and I told you that before. For whatever reason, I put it in God's hands, I guess. And I said, if I'm supposed to be doing this, then, you know, give me some sort of sign. On the way to this training, it was an hour and a half drive, about. And I said, if I'm supposed to do this, you know, just give me a sign. And I didn't take any money with me. And so when I got there and they did all their stuff, it was the same exact thing as the first time. And they were trying to get you to sign up. You could tell it was a hard sell trying to get you to sign up for this training. And when it came time to sign up, I was like, I don't think I'm going to sign up. And my team leader said, well, why not? What's the problem? I said, well, I just don't want to spend that much money right now. So he said, well, what if we help you out? What if we, my team leader helped me out to sign up, if I would sign up like right then. So I did, I agreed to sign up. And I just had to like pay, I had to pay in installments basically, instead of paying it all right away. And so I still wasn't sure how I felt about it though. I wasn't super enthused, even though that was my sign that I was supposed to do this. But like the next day, we all got emails saying that the entire program had just been revamped. Like at that point, hey, we're doing it's Bold 2.0 now, it's completely different. And it was crazy. Went through the program, same 7 week time span, but it was like, I don't know, I'm not a mathematician, but it was like 10,000% better. And it was funny, like looking back at it, like there's all signs were pointing to like, I don't really feel like going to this training. And that's in my mind, it was because it was outdated. Not because it wasn't good, because it was good and it was helping agents do better in their business. But for what I got out of it, the motivation part, I didn't need that part. So it's just very odd that I decided to do that. But what I'm getting at is, if you say something is outdated based on what you know, and those people probably really feel that our systems are outdated, the training is outdated, because maybe it was outdated before. And I understand why it was outdated, because Keller Williams was the number one real estate agent in the world. It was working. And they even, that's built in, maybe to a flaw, that was built into the system, that was built into the training, into the culture. But it was reiterated over and over again, like, don't change this. This works. If you do this, it will work. And I'm not saying it didn't work, but that was built into the training from the beginning, so it never got updated, never got changed, because it didn't have to be changed. Lo and behold, it changed, and it changed for the better, and it's awesome. So that's just the training part. The technology part, I'm still trying to wrap my head around the technology part. And not because I'm not tech savvy, I am tech savvy, but it's changing and evolving, like even right now. So when someone tells me your stuff is outdated, like, okay, is it outdated now? Is it outdated now? Is it outdated now? It's changing right now. It's learning. Mm-hmm. It's artificial intelligence. It is absolutely the most groundbreaking technology in real estate. And it's even better than, I don't even want to say in real estate, it's some of the best. Obviously Amazon knows what they're doing with their
Amazon Echo. Actually approached Gary Keller and wanted in on what he was doing with our technology, and Gary Keller said no. And then they were like, okay, well, if we're not going to get on it, can we buy the company? And Gary was like, no, we're doing this. And so now we're a major competitor.
Yep.
With Amazon and Zillow.
Yeah, I'm excited. A lot of people are, there's different camps. People either don't know what's going on, or they're scared out of their mind about what's going on, or they're not worried about it because they know, like, we got this, like, we're okay. So I guess we'll go there a little bit. But yeah, if you don't know, if you don't read up on this stuff, it doesn't interest you. Zillow is trying to pull, a Netflix or an Amazon or Uber, and basically take over, disrupt, I guess you could say, the real estate industry. And they used to say, they spent a lot of time saying they weren't trying to do that. They were just trying to complement or augment the industry. And they finally, I guess recently they admitted that they're not. They want everything. They want the rule real estate.
They want to capitalize.
They want to change real estate. They actually want to change the laws. There's actually lawsuits going on. They're trying to get different real estate laws changed. And of course they're touting it as it's the best thing for the consumer. But at the end of the day, it's the best thing for Zillow. It's the best thing for their investors. So, and I don't know. The jury's still out on that, for how consumers are going to react to that. But it really doesn't matter. What matters is the brokerage prepared for that to change to whatever the landscape changes? Because there's, no matter what, it's going to change how we do things.
Absolutely. Here's the thing. It's changing. And whether we see it now or we see it 2 months, 2 years from now, it's changing. And we all need to be on board and be aware and acknowledge that it's happening, because those who don't see it coming or don't want to see it coming will be first to be affected by it.
Right. Yeah, I'd rather not notice. I'd rather be so in the middle of it that I don't even realize how much it's changing. I don't want to be hit in the face by the reality.
Yes.
That, like, oops, we're shutting down the doors or whatever.
Oh, yeah. So, oh my goodness, I've been replaced by an app.
Right.
Because that's essentially what Zillow and Amazon are trying to do, is take the person out of the equation.
Right.
The real estate agent out of the equation.
Right. And I know, and where I was kind of going with that, a lot of consumers probably aren't going to know or care. Maybe they won't care. They'll care eventually. But they want to give up. They want to make everything easy. Like, that's what all these other industries, the technology has made it easier for the consumer. And maybe it will make it easier for the consumer in real estate. But what's going to happen is people are going to start losing money, because you need people. I'm not saying this as a real estate agent. You're a real estate agent. But people don't trust us for whatever reason. As the experts, you can't take the person out of the equation. Someone that goes into your actual house and knows your actual market and does the things specifically within your house. How does your house compare to this other house? Zillow, no matter how smart they make their technology, they're not going to know that.
No, and it's true. Like, we need the real estate agent, because I can go, as a real estate agent, I can go to meet with you as the buyer, and you say, hey, I was thinking about that house down the road on 123 Smith Street. And I can automatically, without having to pull it up and look through stuff, I know, I've been in it, and I'm like, oh, you don't want that house. And then give them a list of reasons why. You take that person out, and I'm afraid for the consumer. I'm afraid for their representation.
Right. And people don't understand that all the rules we have in real estate, some people act like it's, you know, to screw people over. And it was the exact opposite. It was from people, from it not being regulated, Wild West. Like, every time something bad happened, you know, there's another rule. It's like most industries, but it's like so heavily regulated. Mm-hmm. And people worry about how easy it is to become a realtor. And maybe it is too easy to become a realtor, but it's not easy to be one. People don't understand that. Just getting a license doesn't mean anything.
That's right.
You have to learn how to do your job, first of all, and then you have to hold yourself. You're held to a pretty high standard. There's a lot of laws and regulations, not even talking about culture, not even talking about, company values. I'm talking about just straight up laws.
On the national and on the state level.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's good. It's good for consumers. But really, another part of the technology companies trying to disrupt the industry is getting rid of those laws. They're going to have to get rid of some of those laws that protect the consumers to do what they want and be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's, like you said, I'm kind of scared for the consumer as well. More so than I'm scared for my job. I'm not concerned about Zillow taking my livelihood. Mm-hmm. But I really do think that disrupting this industry if it's to the same extent that it's happened in other industries, it'd be bad.
Yeah, and that would be a fear that would resonate with you if you were with another brokerage that did not have the backing of $1 billion into the technology that will help us be relevant and competitive in a market. That's, I'm scared for those people.
Right. Yeah, because that's the tech companies in to our industry is to say, well, you guys don't have technology. You need tech. We can replace people with technology. But like, no, we're good. We have technology and people. If we have both, then we don't have to worry about that. We don't have to worry about Zillow changing the whole space.
That's right.
Taking it over. So the thing with technology, though, too, and having it available at our company, at least, is I see people that are scared of the technology, even though they know they need it, and they'll still say, yeah, we're Keller Williams and we have all this technology. I see people that are fighting against it, and people don't realize, even right now, if you don't embrace this and learn it, even though you work here, even though you have access to it, you're going to get crushed by it.
Mm-hmm.
You can say all day long, we have all these things. We have all these shiny toys and great training. And if you don't go to the training, you don't learn the systems and all that stuff, what good is it?
Yeah, you know, so that's the true kicker, is whenever agents have access to it all, but they're so resistant to change that they don't see the value in it, because all they see is the task at hand. And really, I truly believe and agree what you say, that if you're not on board, you're gonna get left behind. You're gonna get crushed by this. And it's not that we're saying, oh, you have to do it. We're saying, oh my goodness, like this is where we're headed. Technology is no longer the one thing that is a benefit to us. This is a way of life. Everything we do now is through our cell phone, through social media. We communicate with our bestest of friends through an app. And so it really is mind-boggling to think that an agent can have access to all of this billion-dollar technology and not want to implement it because they're resistant to the change.
What do you think is going to happen soon? So for the people that are resistant to change, you're the team leader. You're responsible to keep the ship pointing in a certain direction. I'm not going to ask you what you'd rather see, but I'll ask it in a way like, what do you think is necessary if people just absolutely refuse? I won't say refuse, but if people just don't take to this technology, it's really going to hurt their personal business, but also going to hurt the reputation of our market center.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do as a team leader? How do you...
Well, I just have the philosophy, kind of like school, no student left behind, no agent left behind. I think we all have... I mean, because I am not a tech-savvy person. This is a learning curve for me. And so I'm one of those agents that I'm going to need help. And so we have designated certain agents to be able to help those of us who aren't embracing it as much as we should. And I'm speaking for myself. And so that's one thing that we're doing, but also baby steps, right? We don't expect anyone to jump into this, you know, go from not using it one day to jumping in, knowing everything about it. And so just introducing it at a nice pace for someone who can wrap their head around it and then implement that and then master that and then move on to the next.
Right. And I didn't mention this earlier, but I love how Keller Williams has rolled this thing out. They're doing it, they're building the airplane in flight, basically. And I know it's not always the effective way to do things, but with this technology, I really do believe it is. Whatever they had ready, they launched it out so we could use it. And they said over and over again, please break this so we can fix it. Try to break it, try to mess with it, and because we need to make sure it works. And the last thing they're gonna do, the consumer app that is gonna be the last piece of this, is not going to be released until it's ready, which makes sense. But everything else for the agents that's helping us make our business better or easier, helping our business grow, like all that stuff, just, hey, this isn't ready yet, but go play with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's grown like crazy. Like it really has.
Well, yeah, and you take that, we're the number one real estate agency, firm, brokerage, franchise, whatever you want to call us, in the world. And so don't quote me on this, but I want to believe we have over 800,000 Keller Williams real estate agents, and we're international. So if you think that we're all using this, and then they're using the big data from what we're doing to fix it, make it better, I mean, no one else is doing that.
Nobody else probably can do that.
That's right.
And that goes back to what I said earlier. I love that. I don't care how much it costs me. I don't care how much it costs of my commission split, knowing that it's helping me.
Yeah,
and it's all a big, it's a circle of life.
Yeah, and so, you know, my husband makes fun of me all the time because I'm like, use my app, because not only is technology helping us as real estate agents be better with our time management, it's actually taking some things off of our plate to help us, but it's also helping the consumer and the client. And so, you know, he's in the business of investing, and so I'm having him use my app so it can help him find properties, and I don't have to do it. It's so awesome.
Right. So that's a good segue, because we were talking a lot about Keller Williams. Let's talk a little bit more about Keisha Bradley.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So, so you mentioned your husband does investing. What, that seems like a time-consuming profession. And I know you have a time-consuming profession, so how does that work for you guys?
Well, you know...
Put you on the spot.
Yeah, no pressure. No, it is inherent. It's all in what you're investing in, right? So for him, and he has such a great business mind that he sees an opportunity to invest in way bigger things. I'm like one track mind. I'm in real estate. I sell houses and commercial properties, but never have I ever really wanted to be a landlord, or have I ever really wanted to flip commercial properties. And that's what he's into right now. And it is very much time consuming, but the payoff is way, way better than flipping a house.
Yeah. I know you guys are in the middle of doing another side project, which you haven't talked about. Would you like to talk about that?
Sure. So, you know, when you work with like-minded people, it's one thing, but when you're married to someone that is like-minded and has that entrepreneur thought process, we're constantly talking about what can we do next, what can we do, what's fun, what would be challenging, what would pay off. And we live in a small town, and a small town that doesn't have a lot of variety as far as food goes. And my husband's been in the business in the food and beverage industry for a very long time. And one day a thought popped in his head. He was like, well, maybe we should buy a restaurant. Okay, I've never worked in a restaurant a day in my life. So I vetoed that. I was like, no way. I don't know anything about that. So that thought came, went, and then one day he said, I'm going to do it. And I said, what? What are you going to do? And I am not kidding. I named 20 things that we have talked about in the last 6 months of doing. And the restaurant was the very last one. And I got to it and I was like, you're going to open a restaurant. And he was like, yeah. And it's going to be a Chinese restaurant. Okay. Envision my head hitting the table. I mean, my jaw dropped and I couldn't believe it. But he made it happen. An opportunity came up. One of the buildings in our small town was up for sale, and it was a failed restaurant, so it had a lot of the things that we needed to be able to make it successful, because otherwise if we would have had to build a restaurant, it would not have been feasible. And he just jumped in, and it's his first major project, and he's still working a full-time job and doing that.
Well, and you're working a more than full-time job as well, so what's your, not to put you on the spot, but what do you envision that looking like when you get it, when it's physically built out? What's your plan?
Yeah, so we're just digging in, and we both made a commitment to one another that we will do whatever it takes, with me in my professional life, and then him and his, and that we were just going to see this through, and we were going to put whatever time we needed to, and we both agreed that there are going to be days, sometimes weeks, that we only see each other in passing, but it's because it's going to be a good benefit for our family, and that's that we have our family in mind in this. And so we're just, he, bless his heart, he goes to work at night, comes home about 1, and then goes straight over there, does everything that he can, stays up till about 6 o'clock in the morning, goes home, takes a nap, and then does it all over again.
That's
and
crazy.
So whenever we actually do open, which is hopefully in early October, we will start seeing each other more.
Yeah.
But what a great opportunity for us to be able to provide something to our community that is different and is much needed.
Right. And people don't think, I read stories all the time, because I read motivational stuff and listen to motivational podcasts and videos. And society, I guess, now wants the benefit or wants the end result of the hard work, but doesn't want to put the time in. So, like, I can very much appreciate what you said. You're doing this for your family, even though it's hard on your family mm-hmm. now. You know that it will be worth it
mm-hmm.
when the results, when you the money starts coming in
mm-hmm.
and the schedule frees up, and people aren't willing for whatever reason to put that time in. I guess it's because social media, they see the results.
Well,
and
that's
they want
it. We're an instant gratification kind of society right now. Like, we get quick results all the time, and when that doesn't happen, we get frustrated. This is not one of those things, and this has really tested our patience, just because, you know, we've struggled with having the right people show up and work, and that's been the only real stress of this all is relying on other people to do what we've hired them to do, and then them not doing it.
Right. I'm excited. I'm excited about your restaurant. Maybe you can host the open house for me, and I can give away a gift
yes.
card to your Chinese restaurant.
And we're white. We're not Chinese. And
not remotely Chinese.
Not remotely.
And I don't think you get any less Chinese than Keisha. I don't know.
No, and we get that all the time. Well, you're not Chinese. No, and really, it's going to be Asian food, and Blake has worked really closely with some connections he has in Houston to develop the recipes to make sure that they're authentic. And I truly believe with anything, when you have a good business model, and then it really doesn't matter, you know, and this is a business decision.
Yep. Well, I tell you what, if you want us to come to your restaurant, you need to have a gringo menu that has, for a kid menu, sorry, if I offend anybody. With hot dogs on it, because Sophia only eats hot dogs.
Okay, done.
Chicken strips sometimes, but mostly hot dogs. I don't know if you should have hot dogs at a Chinese restaurant with all the,
We already get those jokes.
Okay.
We get those jokes already.
Right, so I guess you can
yeah.
do it.
All right. No cat and dog,
all right.
I promise.
Cat's all right, but anyway. All right, well, cool. So I appreciate you taking the time out. I know, like I said, I'll reiterate how I know you're busy, and I really do appreciate that you sat down for the podcast. I'm just starting out. I'm trying to get – so this is episode 4. I was told by my handler who set me up with this podcast that you have to make it to 7. 7's the magic number to know you've made it. So I'm, like, just crawling to episode 7. We'll see. We're more than halfway there now, so I appreciate it. You're the tipping point.
You're doing great.
To make it to episode 7. But I really didn't realize how tough this was going to be. I'm not a naive person whatsoever, but I really did think I would just naturally be able to do this a little bit easier. But I appreciate it.
Oh, I think you naturally do what you do, and I think it's awesome.
Well,
I love it.
Cool. Well, then you have to listen to it.
I will.
All right. I'll talk to you later. And if any of you in listener land happen to agree with this completely unbiased lady, go ahead and check out some of my other podcasts and hit subscribe. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. If you have any suggestions for future podcasts or you want to be on the podcast, let me know. If your suggestion is to shut up, then keep that to yourself. Until next time, arrivederci.